Welcome to Tip Top, growing up your business with Metronomics. We will be talking with business thought leaders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and business team coaches who have all taken the journey to grow up their businesses to their tip top. We'll be sharing strategies, systems, and stories on how you can grow up your company at the speed you want. If you are searching for your path to the tip top and feel your time is running out, then this podcast is for you. I'm your host, Shannon Susco. Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Metronomics Tip Top. Grow up, just everyone needs to grow up. And that's what we're going to be talking about here today. With me, John Ninkovich. John has a great background that I'm really excited to explore. John is a Metronomics coach. I'm going to be upfront with that. And John and I have known one another only for a couple of years, John.
Yeah. Yep.
We're going to jump in with just learning about John's background. Great background. I'm really happy to dig in and experience and then really talk about your journey as a coach. We just had a good conversation about getting involved, stepping up to coach others, as well as, you know, I think the nugget out there that I just took out of that conversation, John, was all around questions. And as a leader or a coach, it's about the questions. John, give us a bit of background of where you started and then a little bit of your journey to leadership. You've had some really great leadership positions over the years, and I would love to just learn more about those.
Sure. Yeah, going way back, I grew up in family businesses. You know, my experience started when I was literally a kid. I was 10 years old and my family was in the dry cleaning industry. And you know, when I was 10, I was a really shy kid. And my parents decided they were going to put me on a counter of a store. So every Saturday morning, instead of going outside and playing, I got up at 8 a.m. with my dad. And he took me to one of the stores. And then, you know, that's how I learned how to talk to people and how to deliver customer experience and commerce. And so I grew up in that environment. And we were a pretty successful organization, so we probably bought and sold 50 companies over that time frame. I was in that business with my family. And that's learned a lot. You know, I really learned a lot about what leadership's about and what it's not about. Also, when I got married, my wife and I had an opportunity to actually invest in dry cleaners with my dad and my uncle. So we bought 3 dry cleaners instead of buying a house.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, we did pretty cool. We did pretty good with that over about a 3-year period. And then we had guy that was actually doing a startup of a computer training company that had approached my family about, do we want to fund this thing? I was actually selling software at that point. So the dry cleaning thing was a side hustle for me. I did that at night and on weekends. And, you know, we looked at this over about a 6-month period. We decided that we were going to make that investment. So I actually sold my equity and my dry cleaners to my dad and my uncle. And the 3 of us went in and bought 50% equity of this computer training company, which was a startup franchise. And we've been lucky enough to own franchises in the dry cleaning industry, but this was a franchise in the computer training industry. And so we did a startup, and I was 27 or 28 years old, something like that, and did a startup, had my first child. I quit selling software. We had a guy that was actually running the company that was looking for the investors, so we went in. And started to grow that company. It was a heck of a journey around how to put a great board together, how to have the right investment strategy, how to have the right business strategy. And what we found very early was that our business strategy was we were late to market. And so this was in 97. We thought that we were going to be able to do the kind of field of dreams thing, which is if you build a big computer training center and you publish a schedule that a lot of people
train.
And the reality is that we were really late and that there were other entries and entrances to the market that were filling that, and we just could not compete with them. We didn't be really nimble and make a lot of quick decisions around what we were going to do to grow the company and achieve our goals. It was interesting over a 3-year period. We did 3-year planning back then. So it's interesting that in the Metronomics world, we're doing 3-year planning, but we did a 3-year plan.
It
was interesting because it's very widget based. So we needed how many classes did we have to have every day? How many people in a class?
Right.
Public classes and private classes. We had that all figured out. What was interesting is we ended up hitting all of our 3-year goals, but none of them in the way that we thought we were going to. So as we got into the market, we were late to the market. We had to adjust quickly, and we did. And so we found a niche, which was large corporations that were migrating their technology stacks, Lotus 1, 2, 3, to all these disparate operating systems. Everybody's going to Microsoft products, but nobody knew how to use those. And so our competition was actually selling, you need to go to 3 days of training to be able to use Microsoft Word or Excel or Windows 95, whatever it was. Our approach was, let's skinny that down, let's minimize that, let's train you on only the things you need to do in order to do your job. So we actually figured that whole process out and did a really, really good job of, you know, figuring, helping those organizations minimize their time, because they don't go to 3 days of training, they go into 1 day of training. And so we did really well with that. We grew that company, we ended up buying some of our partners out over a 4 or 5 year period. We grew it for about 8 years, and then we started to see really a decline in the need for people to do desktop training, because everybody started to get familiar with, you know, the difference between Windows 95 and whatever the latest version was. Significant. We did continue to evolve. And so we were trying to do that, had an opportunity to sell the company in 2006. We decided that now was a good time to sell the company. So we did that in 2006.
Can I ask you a question? Because it's such a key time that you grew that company through, right? You grew that company through, you know, late 90s through to mid 2000s. And in that time, the internet bubble burst, there was major economical changes. And I think about the time we're in right now, where everyone's sort of getting ready, prepping. What's like to come through that time, that period of time, what were the things that you and leadership team and the organization, what were some of the things you did? Because not everybody made it through that time.
Yeah, I would say the most important thing that we did is that, and I was always, as a CEO, I was still really focused on sales and running a sales organization. So eight teams that were out doing that work, but we really hit our ear to the ground. And I will tell you what we did is that we got rid of everything that was extraneous, and the things that we really focused on, instead of doing generic training, we got into doing things like ERP training. So things that they were using to run their business. So we got really good at like doing PeopleSoft deployments.
Huge at that time.
Early Salesforce. And so what we did is really focus on mission critical needs. Right. We got into like laboratory information systems in the pharmaceutical industry. So stuff that they had to have, they had to train people on it. Both technology and process. And so we got really good at understanding those markets and understanding who are the right people for us to sell to.
Yeah.
I thought we had a really good go-to-market that we were able to execute, and we were able to deliver that really consistently. And so I think one of the things that we did is we made really hard decisions around understanding what were the businesses we should be in and not be in. An example, like we kind of ran this business of running a public scheduled training where we'd send a flyer out, and here's all the days that you can take a class. And that was worth a couple $1 million a year to us. But when we looked at our time and effort to really operationalize that business consistently, it was something that was, it wasn't really worth our time and effort to continue to do that. So we made a business decision to really shutter that business down and redirect our resources into business that we thought we could really grow. And so that was a really good decision that we made and allowed us to stay viable when a lot of our competitors, they went away.
Yeah. I love that you said to really, you know, you had to make some really hard decisions, because as we go into times and even what we're, you know, rolling forward with right now, we have to make some decisions, and we have to make decisions anyway, but those times force you, those external pressures. Tell me, so you sell the business, it's 2006, right? So that's great, great exit. What happens then?
So I actually ended up going to the Gallup organization as a management consultant, which was cool work because we were doing a lot of management consulting kind of stuff. But I went there and I worked with some really big brands on their customer and employee strategy. So I was a lead partner, really working with their senior leadership, CEOs of multi-billion-dollar companies, helping them to really figure out really how do we drive an engaged workforce. We did a lot of selection work for them. How do we create great managers? So a lot of the things I do today in my work with my
clients
is really foundational from my work at Gallup. So we spent a tremendous amount of time in when I was at Gallup really helping organizations to understand their people strategies and how with the right people strategies, what that really does to your customer strategy and how that those linkages really affect and drive an increase in share wallet. And so we did a lot of work there. It was fascinating work. I learned a ton there. I was some of the smartest people I've ever worked with worked at Gallup. It was a great spot to be in. And I was there for a couple of years. And I'll tell you, it was the biggest company I ever worked for. 18 months into it, I realized that I learned a lot, but I really miss kind of running my own thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to just do the consulting thing in the manner I was doing it. And so I actually started putting together a plan to make an investment in another business. And I really wanted to focus on businesses that were recession-proof. And
right.
For me, that meant two industries. One was healthcare and the other was financial services. And for me, it meant that people are always worried about their health, and the other was they're worried about their money. And so, yeah, I went through a 6-month process to figure out what the heck that I wanted to do in either one of those markets. And
yes.
Figured out that I wanted to get into healthcare in some way because I thought there was real opportunities where there was huge innovation that was going to occur in the United States and globally. There actually put an investment group together and we wanted to buy a whole healthcare company in the middle of 2008. You know, that was a journey where that's where actually I got exposed to my first real coach, because in that we had a really good strategy. We knew exactly what we wanted to get done. We had a really good widget-based approach of like how many patients did we have to have on census, and you know how long would they stay in census, and how many do we need to add, and what kind of clinical staff do we need to have in place to support that. So we had all that stuff figured out, but you know, one of the things that we struggled with was really how do we work together as an investor group, grow the business and get the next level of performance. And for me as the CEO, what I started to realize is that I was facilitating all my own meetings with the board, and one of my other partners was also operational in the business. And so we were very aligned when we put this thing together, and then very quickly we started to see alignment started to change as life changes and people had different things that were important to them. And it really started to put stress and struggle in our operation of how we're in the business day to day. At that point, I realized that, you know what, I need some help. I need somebody from the outside that had been there and done that. Because my first opportunity in the computer training business, I had 7 partners, but we controlled the majority of it. So we were
right.
We got along well, that group got along well, so we didn't have any partner issues. Got into this, we started partner issues. So I thought, oh gosh, I need hope. The one thing I've learned in my business is that if partners aren't aligned at the top around really where they're going with the business, how they can invest and grow for the business, who's doing what, how are you going to pay each other, how do you make decisions, you can have all the greatest strategy and execution plans you want, it's not going anywhere. And so,
right. Right.
You got to get that figured out first. And we brought a guy in, a couple guys that didn't really get it done for us. We brought a third guy in that really was a game changer for us.
Nice.
And helped us come in and try to put some word around it. We never got to the level of performance that we really wanted to, just because I think those partner issues kind of got in the way of it. And about 5 years later, I decided that, you know what, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
And one of the things that I kind of learned in that whole 5-year time period is that I can make more money, but I can't make more time. It wasn't worth it for me to continue to be frustrated with kind of where we're at. So I sold my equity in that situation and decided to go do something different. I learned a ton from that. I'll tell you that whole experience, I couldn't do what I do today.
Yeah.
One experience way more valuable actually than the one I did before, where we did pretty good. We made up three in that first one at about a 500% return on their money. This one didn't, and I took a big haircut in it. But I'll tell you that I wouldn't change it. When I was in the middle of it, but I wouldn't change any of it, because I just think that it made me so much better as a coach and as a leader. And I just don't think that you can pass up those, that I wouldn't change anything I went through. So we got past it, moved on, and then I actually went to join a buddy who had started a staffing firm in the early 2000s and had an opportunity to start a healthcare division. Went in there, I actually started a healthcare division from scratch because one of his big clients had asked him to get into the healthcare staffing world, and he didn't know what that looked like, and I've been in that world pretty intimately. So I went and started a healthcare staffing division, did that for a couple of years. And over the next couple of years, I actually became the president of the company. And, you know, we grew the company from, I don't know, 24, 25 million, something like that, to 50 million over a 3-4 year period.
Wow.
And,
that's huge.
It's big growth. again, it was a great learning opportunity. I brought my coach in that I had that really helped me in my own healthcare. He was just a huge asset for the organization, but he was really an asset for me. I knew that he held my had my back. And, you know, I think one of the things that I found hugely valuable in having a coach is that it's lonely at the top. And, you know, there's days that you feel like you're walking off the plank and you're jumping in the ocean. And there were days I call him like, I can't do this anymore. He's like, no, you're all right. Let's talk about it. And he would, you know, he would kind of pump me up. And much as I was self-directed and I always know I don't want to get done. And I never needed a ton of recognition because I was always self-motivated. There were days like, another gut punch. And he helped me a ton. And so through that company, we grew the culture. We did a really good job with that. And over a, you know, 5-year period, I just felt like, all right, it was time to go do something different.
Yeah.
Really take the skills that I learned. It's funny, I thought about coaching before, but it wasn't until I had my coach, Mike, come to me and say, have you ever thought about doing this work? And he said, have you ever thought being a coach? And I said, I have. I thought it'd be kind of like my retirement strategy. I think at the time I was 52, something like that.
Yeah.
He said, I think you should think about it. He said, I think kind of you're at the end of your journey here. Would you consider getting into the coaching role? And I said, yeah, I guess I would. I don't know who to talk to around, you know, who's doing stuff like we're doing Metronomics today. And he said, well, I have a couple of guys I'd like to introduce you to. And so he introduced me to a couple of guys that were running a company that had 8 or 10 coaches. They had their own kind of methodology. They had attached on the execution side, not doing a lot of strategy work, but really execution focused. And so I went with those guys and decided that, all right, I was going to get certified in that methodology while I was still working for the organization. And I had a couple of buddies that had a company, they got to 60 million and they were stuck at 60 million. And I had a conversation with these guys over a beer and I told them what I was doing and said, I think we might need some help. And I said, well, great, let me go do a day with you. So I said, all right, bring your leadership team in. And they brought 13 people in and we did a day. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to do this whole time. I felt like when I used to
go to football,
which I love, when I was done, I had nothing left at the end of the day. I was so emotionally spent when I was coaching football that I could just like go sleep for 12 hours. For me, that was really rewarding.
Yeah.
Well, they did that day with this group. And I just like, it was the ability for me to use my journey in life. Professionally in my success, but quite honestly, a lot more of my struggles and failures to help other people achieve their goals. And so I just made a decision that day, I'm going to do this. And I did. And so I started about 5 years ago and just went on my own and started trying to find my way.
I love that. I love that you went and did a day and then you've like, this is it. Like, this is just so much fun. Like, this is how that you can take everything you just shared with us from your, you know, dry cleaning to the computer training to then on to home health care, like that, all of it. And then you get to, because that's a lifetime of experience. Like when I was listening to it going, wow, right? But now we get to give it back to help others through their journey. And it's funny you said in your first few, you didn't necessarily have a coach, but you had partners and whatnot. But in the latter ones, you did. Yeah. But the one that you said that the hardest one where you had partners and whatnot, not quite jiving together and all of that. I mean, I had similar experiences. The toughest ones were the ones that we learned the most.
Yeah.
Right. And then we go like, how are we not going to do that again? Right. You know what? Yeah. What would you say, like, if we have many entrepreneurs listening in, CEOs listening in, what would you say your top takeaways from that time was, like your learnings? Because that's what's key. What were your top three?
Are you talking about from my experience where my home healthcare business worked so well?
Yeah.
One is funny. I didn't listen to my dad. My dad was a successful guy. And I guess I thought I was as successful as him when I started to do this. And he said, you know, John, and one of the things I did is I involved family in that business. He told me, and it's funny because I grew up in family businesses. So my dad and my uncle were partners. They had a great partnership. Not that they didn't disagree at times, but they had a great partnership. he told me, he said, you know, one thing you should be careful of is bringing all their family into the business, because it creates difficulty at Christmas parties and birthday parties and all that kind of stuff. And if it doesn't go right, where do you end up? I mean, because I think my ego got in the way. And so for me, that was the first one. And I see that today in a lot of my clients where they still have a lot of family. There's a lot of nepotism is the right word, but there's a lot of family that they're involved in the business, and you have people that are in roles that they shouldn't be in the right roles. And so, you know, I think one of them is making sure that you put the right people around you when you do this stuff. And, you know, my partners are all great guys. I like them all personally today, but it just, at that point, it wasn't the right decision. So I think that was a really important one. I think alignment, which is so much easier said than done, is the most important thing to get right. And I think that starts at the top of your organization. And it's easier, I think, if there's a single CEO at the top. One of the things that my learning with this is that, you know, you don't run businesses through consensus. You do through collaboration, through real dialogue, through healthy conflict, obviously, but in the end, somebody has to make a final decision.
Yes.
And that CEO has to be the person to make that decision. And then everybody else has to get on board with that. And so I talk all the time in my work around the discovery book commit approach, that what we have to do this right is that we got to vet it out. We got to talk about it. We got to fight about it professionally and not make it personal, and all around what's best for the business versus what's best for me. And so that was a big learning for me in that experience, because that's really essential for alignment. And then when we make those decisions, that walking out of the room, whatever it is we decide to do, that there can't be any negative feedback that happens to the rest of the organization. So when leaders leave that meeting, they've been able to really talk about it honestly, their opinion counts, right? All that good stuff. But in the end, they got to be able to move forward in a positive way with whatever the final decision has been made. Now, hopefully everybody agrees with that, and it's great, and I'll say great, but we know that that doesn't happen all the time. It's not always kumbaya. In the end, if I want to be part of a healthy leadership team, I have to put my own agenda beside me, behind me, and I have to be able to move forward with that. So that, for me, was a huge learning in that experience, and I'll tell you, I spent a ton of time in it with my clients.
Yeah.
And really making sure that, you know, one of the things I talk about a lot today is making sure that when our leaders leave the meeting, they go talk to their teams about the work that we're doing, but that messaging is very consistently delivered, that we see how our coaches play the game. I mean,
that's
a huge thing for me today. And that was one of the things my coach brought up for me, which was a big learning in this is that he said to me, how often do you see your coaches play the game? I'm like, what do you mean? He says, well, when you have a meeting, and then your leaders go to have meetings with their teams.
Yes.
Do you ever see how they coach and how they lead their teams? And I'm like, no. He says, you're missing a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
You really got to see, are they delivering the message? Are they meeting the way that you want? You're the one that's responsible as CEO to make sure that leadership and culture, that's being created and executed consistently in the organization. Yeah. And if you're not witnessing it, you don't see how it's happening. It's not happening
what you want. Yeah, I just love that, because my coach of the time said the exact same thing to me, is that you got to go, and you're not there to participate in the meeting. You're there to be the coach of that meeting, to observe and then give that feedback afterwards, to make sure the alignment, the culture, the messages, the consistency, it's fantastic. And it's actually where the coach cascade system came from. So that you've never told me that before. And I just think that's fantastic.
Yeah, that was huge for me. Those are huge. Those are two huge big takeaways for me in that. I use those all the time.
Yeah. What's your third one? Because the first two are great. And I love the second one's my favorite so far, but I'm sure we could make a list of 10. But what's the third one?
I would say the third one was really understanding your core customer. One of the things that I like to talk about a lot is, and when I speak and I get a chance to do a little bit, and I go as leaders, more important strategy or execution, the vast majority say execution. And while I think execution is obviously super important, the thing that's concerning about that, and one of my takeaways from home healthcare, is that the analogy I use is that if I'm mining for gold and I have a shovel and somebody says, all right, go there, there's gold over there, and I take my shovel and I move a bunch of dirt with a shovel and it goes through my process and I get a little bit of gold. then I said, you know what, I have an execution problem. I need to get a backhoe because if I move more raw material, I'm going to find more gold.
Yeah.
So I go move more raw material, I find a little bit more gold, but not all the gold I thought. And so my thing is that if I didn't do the geological studies to really understand, is there really gold there?
Right.
It doesn't matter whether I'm using a shovel or a backhoe.
Yeah.
It's not really worth my time. I have to really understand where do we compete and why do we compete there? Because what happens is I want to go execute a lot and I'm going to get really good at execution. But what I do is I wear my people out because I'm executing a flawed strategy and people go home at the end of the night and they're not feeling successful. And I think that we as leaders have to be responsible for making sure that we know where we're competing. Why are we competing? Can we have a differentiating position in the market? Can we win consistently there? So then I put my people in a position to execute consistently. So I go back to that experience. I'm going to leave all my experiences. For me, it's really about understanding where are the right spots for us to be able to grow a healthy business. And that's not everything. And so for me, I think that's probably the third thing that was most impactful.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It's just the foundation of strategy. And your analogy of getting the team to go execute in a place that isn't going to get the gold, we just burn them out. Why do we do that? It's
not
so flawed. Yeah, it's not. Let's switch gears and talk about your coaching business because Wenton did that day of coaching, right? Yeah. You fall in love. It brings a lot of joy, right? It's super fun. Tell me about your coaching business today. Tell me about like, where do you coach? You know, tell me about who's the core company. If I think of core customer, who's your core company that you support? And sort of what are some of the sizes of the companies you work with and all that great info?
Yeah, so when I started, you know, one of the things that you do is, and I talk to my clients about this, is all revenue is good revenue when you start a company. And it's not any different for a coach. So when you get going and you have any income coming in, you scramble. You do whatever you have to do to try to make commerce occur. I started 5 years ago doing whatever I could to get a buck coming in. And then you learn as you go and you start to understand what are the kind of organizations, what are the kind of leaders that you really can work with and help to make an impact. So for me, it's a constant evolution of my core customer. I feel like I really have it dialed in, and that really has occurred for me in the last 12 to 18 months, where I think I've gotten really good at understanding who those clients are, where I can make a big impact. And they say no to work now, it doesn't align with that. And so for me, it's really, I do a lot of work with organizations that have been around for a while. So I have a couple of companies I work with that are 100 years old. I have a company that's been around for 70 years, 65 years, 40 years, and 55. So I have 5 or 6 that are that old. And a lot of my work is around actually tends to be like CEO or president transition work, where the CEO doesn't want to necessarily leave the business, doesn't want to sell it, but doesn't want to run day-to-day anymore. They obviously want to have oversight. They want to have influence, but they don't want to deal with all the stuff that running a business day to day takes. And so I do a lot of that work. My clients are, I do a lot of work in like construction, project oriented kind of companies. I have a couple manufacturing firms that I work with, and they tend to be 15 million to 150 million, 175 million in revenue. They have leadership teams between 6 and 9 people, traditionally what they work with.
Yeah.
What they're really looking for is they're really open to learning and coaching, implementing coaching and learning. And I think what I've seen is that they've experienced some kind of pain or struggle where you grow a business and then the things you get to one level of performance aren't the same things you get to the next level of performance.
Yes.
And they think that they're in that position and they've been flying their head against it and not sure what to do next and they need help. Those are the people I work with the best. And it's, for me, it's one, they really value their people. So I'm not, I don't work with people that don't really care about people. Because for me, that's the whole thing. I think that getting the right people in your business from the guys who can afford it, the guy or gal running the business is the most important thing to get really good at.
Yeah.
So for me, I want people, organizations that are really focused on finding great talent, developing great talent, creating a great culture. They have to be coachable. And for me, that means that they have to do the work. They have to implement the things that we're working on. And my job is really kind of meet them where they're at. So I have some clients, like I have a new client who started working with them a month ago, and they have a president in transition. And she is just like, she'll take as much as she can. She's going really fast. I have others that I'm working with that I started in last year. just not fast. They're a little bit slower, not as technologically sophisticated.
Right.
Successful businesses. And my job is to kind of meet them where they're at, push them as much as I can, but not too fast where they can't use all the stuff that we can bring to the table with them. So that's kind of what it looks like for me.
As you said, when you started out, you have much experience building businesses, both your own entrepreneurial, right, growing it up, and as well as a leader. And then you transition over to a coach, right, to the other side. And I did that as well. What's your core purpose today? Why do you do it? A lot of people ask me that, but why do you do it?
Yeah, it's funny. I have one of my clients ask me this, and I have lunch with them once a month, once every 2 months. He says, why do you do what you do? You scream over here what I do going around a company. And I said, yeah, I could. And I had that opportunity. I said, but one is I just love the connection. So I felt that when I first got doing this, it was pretty lonely because I was used to running teams.
Yes.
Yeah. And I struggled with that for a bit. But now I'll tell you, like, I feel like I've got 8 or 9, like, you know, companies that I'm a part of. And I'm a trusted advisor and the CEO or the whoever will call me and say, can I talk to you about something? So for me, it's really about giving back. It's really around helping people to work through the things that I struggle with, the things that I work through.
Yeah.
That I can really help other people kind of evolve through that. Yeah. And I think doing this is hard, right? And what's the number? 4% of companies get over $1 million in sales and 10%.
Yeah.
So it's rarefied air. And I just enjoy spending time with people that are trying to figure out how to get to that next level, whatever
it
is for them.
Right.
It's really, really
love it.
And I'm in it with them. Like if they have a bad month, a bad quarter, I mean, it hurts me. It's not my money in there, but I feel like what can I do to help better? I'm in it with
them. Now you're certified in a few different frameworks, right? You're a certified advisor. You know, you went that route. You're also a metronomics coach and you've gone that route as well. Yeah. But what are the things that you continue to search to learn more on? I mean, that's a wide open question. There's so many things.
It is.
But what are the things that you're sort of working on right now, thinking about for the situation that your clients are in, where you have some external pressures big time right now?
So, you know, there's a couple of things. And one of the things that I'm constantly looking at is there additional capability I should add to my practice. I'm always evaluating that, but I'm really thoughtful about making sure that I'm really good at what I'm doing before I add more stuff onto it. So for me, it's not, I don't want to have this huge wide playbook. Again, going back to my coaching sports days, like having a big huge playbook that I can't execute. I don't want to do that.
Yes.
I think it's hard to do as a coach to be great at everything. So for me, it's really around, one, I'm really focused on being as good as I can in metronomics and the implementation of that and coaching my clients through that process. And I think I'm pretty good at, but I think I have a lot to get better at. So for me, I'm really focused on that. And as I've gotten better at that and adding new clients into that, I think that the work I'm doing with them is more impactful sooner through that. But the other side of it is one of the things I look at is really raw human beings. And so the human side of this thing is as big as the strategy and execution side of it. And so are there tools, is there thinking that I should be including into my practice that helps for me to understand people and people to understand people to get those connections better?
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the things I went through is a program in the last 90 days with some of the other metronomics coaches on positive intelligence. Which is, I think, is really interesting because it really talks about the majority of human beings spend the vast majority of their life in a negative mindset. And I kind of learned that lesson a long time ago when I was running my computer training business. And I was, before I had a coach and I was an entrepreneur, I remember going home at night and there were days that, man, it was upsetting. I couldn't sleep at night. Just thinking about all the stuff going on. You can't
believe
all the stuff. And I really realized that there was nobody who was going to motivate, inspire me other than me. And so I started a long time ago, like, how do I put positive stuff into my noggin so that when I came back from the morning that I was going to be really quality leader, full of energy and excitement about where we're going, even though things weren't going great that day or that week, whatever. So I started that. And so the positive intelligence stuff is something that just getting my feet, you know, my arms kind of around that. But there's a lot to how do I really manage my mindset to stay in a positive world? And how do I not go into a fight or flight thing that we all naturally have? And how do I not react in moments? how do I not do that? But also, how do my clients not do that? Because
the
first thing that happens if I'm a leader and I react, and I react inappropriately as I create an unsafe environment. And man, I'll tell you what, all it does is it takes that organization, it takes that team, it takes that individual. And you want to talk about lack of production. You have a day where you react in front of somebody that's your CEO, your president, your head of sales, whatever it is. And you have a bad moment from a leadership perspective. All you do is put them in a disengagement. And they're not that day for them, even though they're a professional, they're going to go back and do whatever they have to do. In the back of their head, they have this thing, like this cloud that's sitting there, and they're just not being as good as they should. And that leadership. And so we have to, you know, my thing is about how do we start to recognize that stuff?
Yeah.
You know, I can't react in the moment. How do I get myself in a positive mindset? And how do I get on the same side of the desk as the people I work with and the people that I lead versus being on the other side of the desk? I talk about this a lot, is when I have conversations with people, I don't want it to be like I'm looking down the barrel of a gun at them and the gun is pointed at them. That I'm with there with them. Together, we're going to go figure this out.
Right.
Right. And that kind of approach. So for me, it's from kind of building that stuff into my practice.
Yeah, I love that. We know that the people side is the thing. We can have the best strategy, the best execution process, the most cash.
Yeah.
And it's still going to be coming back to our team and from the cultural to how cohesive they are and to who understands what they own and how they're going to contribute to the outcome.
That's a huge one. Yeah, for sure.
Right. And I love that. And I love because I just from learning of positive and intelligence through Group of Metronomics coaches, like I'm into it. It's just helpful to understand mindset because we've lived it. We know our clients are living it and we are with them. We're not giving them advice. We're with them, working them through what they need to at the time we're in.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a couple of quick questions as we round this out. What's the best book, best business book? Like what's your favorite business book?
My first one, actually the one's my favorite is The Five Dysfunctions of the Team.
Yeah. Okay.
So that one. And it's actually, I was in business for 5 years and my business chair gave me that book in, God, I remember 2000 or 2001, something like that. And that book to me was really impactful. I love Patrick Lencioni's stable approach. And so that book for me is my favorite business book of all.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to say, I can't tell you how many times I've read that book. And I continue to read it with my clients. It's just, everyone can find themselves in there. Absolutely. It's so impactful. What's the best technology, gadgets, software, whatever you got going on? What's the best one that you use in your coaching business today?
It's interesting. Mural has been really helpful as we went through the pandemic and having, you know, maybe everybody's familiar with Mural, but it's an online whiteboarding tool. I wasn't impacted by COVID at all with my coaching business. So really quickly, I adjusted and through the Metronomic stuff, we adjusted. Yeah. So we're able to help our clients really stay relevant and make really important decisions in a time that there was a tremendous amount of uncertainty. So for that one, that's been cool. And then I'll tell you, like the metronome software tool for me is continuing to become increasingly valuable for my clients. So I've had clients that have been working for a long time. And so getting them to use metronome is a little bit more difficult than when I start from scratch.
Yes, I agree.
We start to use it. It really is a powerful tool.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Mural.co, an amazing collaboration tool, game changer through the pandemic, but I still use it in person. It's just a game changer for history and whatnot. If you, the listeners haven't found that tool, check it out. Thanks for the shout out for Metronome. It's one of those you build in your behavior into it. So it definitely fits well. One last question. What's the one thing as a coach, team coach, CEO coach, what's the one thing that at the end of every day you go, yeah, I own that. I'm accountable to what, to my clients?
I think for me, it's about getting to the truth. So you can coach and you can kind of move stuff around your plate, right? Like food on your plate.
Yeah.
But in the end, it's really around asking hard questions. There'll be times as a coach, I'll go completely off agenda. Because there's underlying issues that we're not addressing or people aren't bringing out. It's the kind of stuff you can get fired because you're going there and having those really uncomfortable conversations. But for me, I feel like that's what people pay me to do. So,
yeah,
you know, my job is to really hold the organization accountable to performing the way that it said that they need to want to and really living its purpose and constantly kind of holding it up to people. And so I have a bit of a challenging style at times with people where not doing the things we said we're going to get done, or we're not moving things along as fast as we committed to, or we're not getting the results that we need to. That's what the CEOs pay us to do, right? They love us, they like us, they want to like us personally, but in the end, it's really around business results and creating a great culture, right? And I talk to CEOs about this all the time. And really what I see happen, you probably too, is they hire people in the business, and they hire them because they have hopefully a really clear job description, what they want, with very clear accountabilities, really hard, hammering hard on that one all the time. And then I hear this human being, what I see happen a lot is that over time, start to develop personal relationships with the people who work in their organization. And the things that they're really accountable for, it's kind of like the why I hired them and who they are, that kind of flips. And so now it's like, oh, I have this personal relationship with Joe Blow. And Joe Blow, I know his family, I know his personal situation, all that stuff. And is it really getting the job done that we need to get done? I think we have to push people hard on making sure that looking honestly at what are you going to do?
I love what you said. You know, truth, hard questions at the right time. We can ask and say things that others can't at the right time to actually push and make that moment, push through that moment.
Yeah.
So, John, if people want to get in touch with you as a coach, what's the best place for them to find you?
They can email me at john@performixgroup.com. It's performixgroup. That's all one word.com. Easiest way.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. John's a metronomics coach. John's 25 plus years experience as an entrepreneur, CEO, leader, and now is out there helping companies grow and grow up the way they want. Thank you, John, for being here. Thanks, everyone, for listening in. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Shannon. Bye, everybody.
Tip Top is brought to you by Metronomics. To find out more about Metronomics and how this 20-plus year-old proven system will save you time and money as you grow up your business, visit metronomics.com. That's metronomics.com. Also, search for Metronomics in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found.